You're listening to KRUU LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. Welcome to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me is my co-host and mother, Caroline Kilburn.
Good afternoon, everyone. Another beautiful day in Iowa.
And it's a beautiful weekend for Art Walk tonight.
Oh, yes.
And
perfect.
This weekend, Friday, July 3rd, it's the Party in the Park, live on the square. It's the July Art Walk with yours truly, your local grassroots community radio station, KRUU-FM, providing entertainment and broadcasting live from the sound stage in front of the gazebo.
Oh.
And it's a pretty incredible lineup. We've got, at 6 p.m., Steve McLean and the Jefferson County Green Band. That's right, folks. It's Happy Hour Live. At 7 p.m., it's the Rockabilly Bobcats featuring the music of Buddy Holly.
Some of these names just crack me up.
At 8 p.m., after the Apple Pie Contest winner is announced, it's Truck Stop Souvenir, which is a great duo, husband and wife duo, that sang Happy Birthday to you a couple years ago, Mom. Remember that?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And then at 9 p.m., it's Ottumwa's own She Swings, She Sways, featuring their new CD, Wasted Love Songs. So quite an evening of entertainment.
I should say. And that's tonight.
That's
and then tomorrow,
tonight.
Of course, is the big fireworks day.
That's right. Our
wow.
And we couldn't ask for better weather.
No, it's perfect. Perfect.
And we have a very, I think, entertaining and enlightening interview coming up right now
Voices. I should say. Our guest is Steve Siskold, and he's a popular wellness speaker and body-centered therapist, whose clients include Kenny Loggins, Kay Hendricks, and Marcy Shimoff. He's appeared on TV outlets, including CBS, NBC, and has been featured in publications like the Wall Street Journal, the San Francisco Chronicle, and more. His byline articles have appeared in over 40 magazines, so you might have well read something of his. And he is a regular speaker at conferences and events, including World Wellness Day and the Sustainable World Symposium. And the book is What's Your Body Telling You?
Listening to Your Body's Signals to Stop Anxiety, Erase Self-Doubt, and Achieve True Wellness by Steve Siskold. Welcome to Writer's Voices, Steve.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure. I didn't know you were a mother-daughter team, and it sounds great. Sounds like you're having a blast.
Yeah, we are. We met some very
interesting people. Hey, and by the way, I'd love to see the Rockabilly there. Rockabilly Wildcats?
Can you make it to Fairfield by this evening? How far away are you?
I tell you, if I was nearby, that's where I'd be hanging.
Where are you calling us from today, Steve?
I'm in Marin County, north of the Golden Gate Bridge.
Well, That's what I've been saying. We've been having weather like you guys, summer weather like that out there. It's high 70s and nice breeze. And
yeah, the last few days has been wonderful, and we earned it. We deserve it.
It's true. The difference is, of course,
it's good on the body. I lived on Maui for 5 years, pretty much for that reason, because having that weather every day just felt so nice, you know.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It was easy to relax and be creative when it was warm, you know, versus sometimes we're contracted when we're cold and we're running around. And
too high a heat can also be debilitating.
High humidity is just devastating to a lot of people.
Grew up in Baltimore, Maryland, so I know about high humidity.
Well, although we're having lovely temperatures here right now, what we don't have that you have in Marin is we don't have the ocean or the mountains, but we also don't have the extremely high price of living, so we have our blessings to be thankful for.
Right now is so important to people. There's so much stress going on, you know, around the economy and money. And a lot of people are actually, I've been hearing, you know, going to places like Indonesia, Thailand, just to, you know, live somewhere for very inexpensive rates and just be able to survive.
Well, they should come to Iowa.
No,
you can get by pretty well here. Maybe not as cheaply as Indonesia, Thailand, but and it's not as exotic.
There you know, that's a very important factor for people right now, the economy.
Yeah. Well, Steve, what made you decide to write What's Your Body Telling You?
Well, thank you. You know, the first thing is I have probably asked that question, I'm not kidding, if I said 10,000 times, probably not exaggerating, because anytime I was in a session or any participant in a workshop would get caught in their mind, I'd usually say something like, well, why don't you take a breath and Hey, let's see what your body's telling you. What's your body telling you? And I always notice that a different answer would come. So in that practice and in doing research over the last couple of years and just taking the time to actually write everything down, I was inspired to share how that one question can make such a difference in your life and how it's been in mine. I've got a lot of tales that I tell about my own life. When I listen to what my body's telling me, the better result. And some of the magic, miraculous things that have happened.
How did you develop this technique, these techniques, and this knowledge that are in this, that are in the book?
Well, you know, I think it started from, I was in the advertising business. I was successful in advertising. I was very successful in sales, but I noticed people were not always saying what their body was saying. Like, they'd be saying one thing. A simple example would be, you know, how you doing? I'm fine. But really, boy, you can see anger seething through their body. Well, even in marketing, relations, and sales, people would say something that I would write that I thought really sounded good, but their body would send out another message. So I started studying body-centered psychotherapy and so forth. And, you know, that's really how I got started. And noticed that, boy, I want to know more about how come we often look like we don't live in our bodies or communicate what our bodies are saying. So I just became immersed in that.
And of course, nonverbal communication is a huge part of the message that people get from us. You know, what our bodies say probably has more impact than what our words are.
Often. I mean, you know, we can see it constantly if we watch the news at night most of the time. I'm writing a blog now for Psychology Today, which is very exciting. And a lot of what I'm going to be writing about, for instance, you know, I might say, gee, did you notice on TV today, you know, when the wife of a politician who had an affair is saying, I stand by my man, we're going to work it out, but her whole body's saying, like, I'm crushed, I'm hurt, I'm angry. And yet, you know, she has to stand tall and smile. I just notice in those messages all the time. But also I've taken it further in the respect of just listening from as simple as when you're driving your car. You know, you could be gripping your wheel, not breathing, tensing your shoulders, and get to work and say, gee, I've got the worst neck headache, and have no idea that you created it because you weren't listening to what your body was saying. Your body, if you took a moment, would say, hey, you're gripping the wheel, you're upset about something that happened at home, you're gritting your jaw, let go, relax, de-stress, because we bring that in our body so often, but we're unconscious of what's happening.
Yeah, and we sure are.
Now, knowing what your body's saying, of course, and knowing how to change the message or react to it are maybe two different things. Do you give techniques for both?
Yeah, I think it's important, like I said, to at least have awareness. Like right in this moment, if anybody's listening and noticing, are you holding on to something too tight? Are you breathing relaxed breaths? Or are you, you know, in a fight or flight multitask mode where you're not breathing? Just from that level, I think it's really important. The other level is where we had things happen to us when we were younger. You know, somebody might have slapped us on the shoulder, our older brother, and it hurt, and it might have been every day. And then somebody will tap you on your shoulder, and you go, oh, wow, and you'll respond and not even realize, like, well, why did I just respond that way? Because in your body memory, there are memories of those traumas, those opportunities for us to look and go, wow, that's why I'm responding that way. That's why when my wife says this to me or my husband or my boss, I get so triggered. So I'm actually encouraging us to listen to our body, not just from a body language perspective, but from a perspective of we can learn and heal and make our health better and our relationships better if we understand some of the stuff that's stored in the body that's actually running our life.
Now, that's one of the main themes of the book, as I understand it, is that everything that ever happened to you is, well, it says right here, everything that happens to you is registered in your body, literally etched in your cells and your consciousness. And we may not have a conscious memory of something, and yet our body still has stored that a traumatic event or...
We know that everything we read, hear, or see is in our mind, and sometimes it comes back to haunt us, right?
Yeah.
And that's why you need to read and
exactly.
Read and see.
And you know, the thing is that let's face it, our body was there. Was our mind? Not always.
Yeah,
at times right. When someone's being shell-shocked, hurt, traumatized, abused, they'll go out of their body, which thank God they did, because that's how they survived. And
they
would, or we or I, would have an opportunity where, oh, this is too painful. So you start to think about something else. You pretty much push it out of your mind. And often there are people who go, God, you know, I don't quite remember it consciously, but now that I'm breathing and feeling, the body memory is telling me something that I didn't know. A real quick example would be a guy who was trying to build his business, and basically what he was doing was perfect, but he just couldn't seem to close deals or get the business going. And what he uncovered through getting into his body, through some of the techniques I teach, he uncovered that as a small boy, he had a body, what's called a cellular memory, appear. And he said, wow, I don't know if this is affecting me, and I don't even know if it's true, but I'm seeing myself as a young boy looking out and everybody in the neighborhood getting Christmas gifts but me. And when I asked my dad, why aren't I getting any, my dad said, oh, you think they're happy? You know, when you get a lot of gifts and you make a lot of money, it's just going to make you sick, son. So, gee, I wonder why he wasn't doing well in his business. His billboard, his body, his entire language unconsciously was afraid to be successful because he was programmed and taught that success would make him ill. Although his dad said, well, I did tell you that. I wasn't doing well, and boy, I'm so sorry I told you that. And the guy's whole body relaxed. He totally shifted. He doubled his business the first month. See, he had an unconscious belief that lived in his body that was running how he presented himself, but he didn't know about it. So we don't always remember, but our body does because it was there.
Now, does everybody get such dramatic results from tapping into their body wisdom?
Absolutely not. I mean, you know, to put anything across the board, you know, a lot of people do that about their products and their services. To me, what I've seen is I don't see that people always get rid of things, traumas. I do see a lot of where people can loosen the grip. They can understand it in a new way. They can rewire it, meaning now that they're an adult, they can deal with it. They can write a letter. They can speak about it. But, you know, the other thing is that everybody can get some result, even if it's as simple as remembering to breathe or loosen your grip on the wheel while you're driving. But some people actually do have more of a cellular memory or a release in the body. I think we're each different. Some people will get it through feeling in the body. Some will get it through making sound or expressing something out that they had kept in their body for 40 years. You know, get it off your chest, if you will. I think it depends on the individual.
Well, Steve, when was What's Your Body Telling You published? Is it just?
You know what? It was just published.
Just
it came
published.
Out this week.
Wow!
Oh, we're right on the cusp of it.
We're right on the target.
Yeah.
July 8th is the Amazon launch, where people will go to a certain page on my website, and if they order through Amazon, they'll get a lot of free prizes. So really, I'm looking at the official publishing launch date as July 8th.
July 8th. Wow! Now, is this your first major publication of a book?
I did a publication with Random House years ago with two other people. So although that was a major publication, to me, this is really my first. It's me, it's my tales, my stories, my 20 years of practicing, and it's got just my name on it. So I look at this as my first really major expression through McGraw-Hill.
So how does that feel?
It feels incredible. I tell you, a couple of levels. And that's a great question. Number one, you know, I feel like lighter, meaning I've been carrying around this information for so long in my head, in my body, until I actually saw it in a book form just recently. It just made such a difference to not have to think about it or be writing about it anymore, but to actually have it out and just talking about it. And I'm very fortunate. I got the first copy off the press. And my mom had her 90th birthday, so I went back there, of course, and gave it to her for her 90th birthday, and that made it worth it, and that's very exciting.
Oh, I bet. Well, you're listening to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Steve Siskold with his recently or just about to be published, depending on how you look at it, book What's Your Body Telling You from McGraw-Hill. And Steve, did you always want to be a writer?
I would say since college, I was writing music. I was writing poetry. I like being a writer. I didn't have a goal in mind saying I need to write a book. But what happened was, you know, I just had so much that I wanted to share, and I've been sharing it through speaking and videos and audios. It came to me that really what you really need in this culture is you got to have a book. And it's handy for people. They can read on the airplane. It gets people to look at you as more of an expert. So, you know, it was a strategy as much as me wanting to share. And I'm sharing in every medium with today, boy, as we see, podcasts and teleseminars and audio and video. It's just very exciting. And the book is extremely exciting. It's something I can carry and, you know, show people wherever I am. And it's great. Thanks for asking.
You know, it's interesting because we had a guest recently who was feeling a little, I don't know, a little negative about the future of books as a medium. This was a fairly young man and who had just written, you know, just published a book with a major publisher, but he wasn't sure that in 5 years that would even be an option. But it sounds from what you're saying, and I think it's true, that there really still is a place for the old-fashioned page-turning book,
mm-hmm.
even when you have all those other alternative methods of communicating your ideas, which you've been using for years.
Yeah, and you know, I believe that books will be around for a long time. There are always going to be people at libraries. However, just like the big CD chains and radio chains or wax record chains, a lot of them closed. A lot of people, especially the younger people, are enjoying downloading versus going to the mall and buying a book. So I'm aware of it, and I'm just, you know, figure this is the way it is, that we're going to get our information out in the form that people want it. As you probably heard, the Kindle, the Amazon Kindle,
right.
Which is basically the size of a book. It's a little electronic unit. You're sitting at the airport and you say, gee, I'd like the New York Times and I'd like Steve Siskold's new book, What's Your Body Telling You? You press a button and instantly you have it in your little book. You take it on the airplane and you take your finger on this screen and it looks like parchment and you turn it. Now, no, to a person who wants an organic book, it's not the same experience. But to some of these young kids that have been playing with video games and buttons and computers, and cell phones, you know, texting, I think it is the future. And, geez, you know, what are we going to do? We're going to have to just deliver our information in the forms that people want it. The good news is that less trees are being cut down.
That's, yeah, right.
That's true. And the thing that I think is so cool about the Kindle is that you can have 4 or 5 or 6 books or 100 books with you without having to carry them all around.
Well, you know, I used to travel the country with my laptop and about 12 CDs and my little CD player. Now I carry one unit, a little iPhone that I get my email on. I stick into a little disc when I get to wherever I am, and you know, I understand. I mean, carrying 12 CDs, a laptop, and a CD player versus carrying something in my pocket, you know. So I think the technology is definitely moving forward, and it's good to be careful because we don't want to be standing in front of screens all the time and forgetting we have a body. That's a lot of what I talk about, that, you know, take that moment during the day to listen to your body, take that moment to move, breathe, exercise, you know, keep it flowing. We can get stuck, but, you know, there's no way we're going to stop progress, as they say. So I think the truth is that our information is going to be mostly where people can download it and put it onto their iPod and listen to it or watch it.
The only downside I see to this is interaction with people diminishes when you continually do that. You know, you're continually
absolutely. I agree.
Nose in whatever, and I go back to the old writing a letter. Of course, I don't have email, so I write letters. But I love to get a letter. You know, hold it in my hand. This person actually sat down and wrote this. You know, it's pretty neat.
It's wonderful. No, I agree. You know, I think it's a blend. We need to stay in our bodies and focus and breathe and move and exercise and greet people and be with people. We don't want to be caught in, you know, where we're just talking to everybody through Facebook or through screens. But, you know, again, I think it's important that, you know, people are realizing that they can get information that they want, whether it's, you know, something about health or something in their body or something spiritually. You know, they can at least get the information. I think the point you bring up is a good one, is just to, you know, we're all going for balance versus excess. And when we go too much excess, I remember once where a friend told me they took the kids to the beach. And, I mean, think about it, kids in the beach. And the kids didn't want to get out of the van because they were playing with their Game Boy little handheld video game.
Yeah, I saw that in the book. Yeah, that's pretty sad. That's very sad.
That's very sad. So stay in our bodies and keep moving. Don't get too caught in the screens.
Yeah, right.
Now, Steve, how long did it take you to write What's Your Body Telling You?
Well, I would say, you know, for the last 5 years, definitely gathering and starting to really formulate what a book would look like and have everything that I want in it. And then the last 2 years, a lot of writing and editing. And then in the last year, you know, just cleaning it up and waiting for the publisher to get it out.
Now, you have all kinds of professional hats that you wear as author, speaker, singer, filmmaker, businessman, seminar leader. How do you fit all those together, and how did you find time to write a book in the middle of all of that?
Thank you. Well, I think the first thing that I believe in is, you know, if you have a purpose, and my purpose is definitely to express myself fully and to help others live in their purpose and through the body to, you know, be able to express. And when you have a purpose like that, I think it can go in any direction you want. I'm pretty organized in the sense that I look at, you know, compartmentalizing, meaning taking time off to actually write, taking a day to work on music. I think it's really important that if you have a few things that you want to do, that number one, you put them in order. I don't believe you're going to get them all done, and it's to our discredit that we often will say, you know, we have so many things, and what will happen is that will get us disorganized. So I like to say, you know, Friday's my day for this, or, you know, I'm going to be doing radio on these mornings, and that way I can, you know, just to me it's all the same. It doesn't really feel different because it's all under the same purpose. I've helped a lot of people where they didn't have a sense of overall purpose or mission, and it felt like four different things that they were running from and running to. But I think if you have a purpose and it all fits under one umbrella, then you just organize the different activities that you want to have, and that's what I've been doing.
That makes sense.
In other words, I took weekends where I went to a retreat type setting, and all I did was it was my laptop and I cut off the world for 3 days and wrote. And then I knew that those 3 days were designated for that. I think a lot of people try to fit it in, and that's where they get in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you write entirely on computer, or do you use any paper methods for planning or outlining?
Right on computer, and sometimes I'll do an audio tape recording and then listen. Because, you know, an idea will come through, or I just like to lay there or just sit there and quietly, and then an idea will come through, I'll just say it. So I use the tape recorder for video, you know, for audio, and then primarily I use the computer. And the beauty of the computer also is that, you know, you can cut and paste and change some things and then send it to someone and say, what do you think? And with the track changes tool, they can pretty much draw a line or change a word on your document. You can send it back and forth. So, you know, I think being computer savvy really helps if you want to get an editor involved or anything like that. They need to have it in that form, and then they can edit it and send it back to you. So it's pretty, you know, efficient that way.
Now, 5 years is a pretty long time to work on a book. How did you maintain your motivation during that time?
It wasn't easy. I remember my agent saying at times, I'm going to have a contract for you tomorrow. And I go, all right, it's going to be a good one. And then maybe one editor out of six editors for some reason didn't want to touch something with the body, or, you know, and I'd get the disappointing news that, oh, gee, I thought I had it in the bag, but it didn't sell. Because, you know, I wanted to have a publisher that would be a team and distribute the book and so forth. And then I remember just I was living in Maui, just being upset, jumping in the ocean, throwing the stuff away for 6 months, not looking at it, and then coming back with a fresh approach and going, you know, the truth is, if it was supposed to sell, it would have. And looking back at it, it wasn't really what I wanted to say to the world. I was maybe doing it like a lot of us do for other people, or what I thought the agent wanted, or what I thought the publisher would want. So it was a good lesson. And that's why it took time, because it was really, I think, more about me saying, I want to share all of my tales and all of my insights and all of my techniques, and not have somebody that wants to change it or edit it. I really wanted it to be authentic. And I think that's the biggest process in getting your work out there, is, you know, what it takes for you to be authentic.
Now, does that mean that you didn't have an editor make changes, or...?
It meant that what I gave an editor was really what I wanted to say and share, versus writing stuff or being afraid to write something because you think the market might not like it, you know, that kind of process which a lot of artists and writers go through. And I think once I got to the place where I was embodying, if you will, not just in my mind but in my whole body, yes, this is exactly what I want to share, then it flowed out of me easily. And then an editor can do anything they want. My editors improved it, so it was great. But I think it's the idea of giving ourselves permission before we express ourselves. A lot of us, when we were young, would like stand up in front of the class, and maybe something happened, we got laughed at. So we don't usually come out and express ourselves. Some of us would express something, and our mom or dad or a teacher didn't like it, their own opinion, but they would make a negative comment. I've had people who said, you know, I used to be a great little artist. I was so good at drawing. And then, you know, one time I brought a drawing into school, and my teacher said, you didn't do this. Sit in the corner and put a dunce cap on him. Well, he put his nice pencils away from that day on. And through working with me and actually in a seminar, he stood up and said, I'm going to start drawing again. And I've heard from the guy, and he's got that energy again. He's drawing. He may not sell them professionally, but it was a part of him that got discouraged. And I think that's what happens to many of us.
Now, Steve, at what point, you talked about having an agent. It sounds like you got you had an agent fairly early on in the process of putting this book together.
Actually, I've worked with a couple agents, as far as anybody that's listening that wants to write a book and so forth. You know, the key is writing a proposal, which I became very good at. It's not just about writing your book. In fact, publishers do not have time to look at books. They have time to look at proposals, meaning here's what the book's about, here's who's going to buy it, here's a couple sample chapters, versus a whole book. And then the agent is usually who they want to hear from versus you directly. So, you know, I actually got a new agent because, you know, it was just an alignment and a factor, again, of who thought they could take my work and get the right match. So, you know, to find an agent, you really want to find someone that really understands your work and get your proposal in a way that they can go out and share it with people the way you want it. And that was a process in itself that I started. But my most recent agent, you know, it was about a year ago when I had my proposal ready, and then we got a few offers.
Now, finding an agent can be a daunting task for some people, and
it can, but I can give you a shortcut. There's a lot of writers' conferences out there. I think Chicago, L.A., New York, there was a great one in Maui. And if you go to a writers' conference, there's quite a few agents there, and they have this thing where you can sit opposite them and basically pitch them for 5 minutes. Say, hey, I have a book and it's about. And if they're interested, they'll ask you to give your proposal or send them a proposal. So there are ways to go out to the actual industry and these writers' conferences that people can Google and look for and actually get in front of people versus sending it, because it'll sit on a desk most likely if you just send it.
Now, you wrote your proposal, but the book wasn't finished at the time you wrote the proposal. Is that true?
No, in fact, the publishers like that the book's not finished, so they can have a hand in the direction. And also, how it works is they give you an advance so that you can take some time and just write the book.
And then, so once you were able to, you had your proposal, you got your agent. You had your proposal finished.
And then I got offers.
Then I picked
McGraw-Hill because they were great.
That's great.
And then they say, get, you know, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, get us the manuscript, and they give you an advance payment so that you can take some time and write. And that's how it works in the publishing industry.
And do you wait until it's as complete as you think it can be before you send it, or do you send chapters along the way to the editor?
In that case, they just wanted the full manuscript. So basically you write, and fortunately they really loved it, and it was well done, well written, and edited. You know, I learned a lot over the years. And as a result, they actually they made it better, but they didn't have to say, oh boy, this section doesn't work, and redo this, redo that, you know, so it was a pretty quick process. But often people will send it in, and the publisher will say, oh, this is not at all what we want, do it again, or restructure it, or, you know, get rid of these three chapters. It's quite a process to get a book out there. But the good news, again, with technology is you can self-publish tomorrow. You can put something out, and you can buy it from companies that will let you print one at a time or 1,000. You know, you buy one, it's 12 bucks maybe, and you buy 1,000, it's less expensive. So, you know, nowadays, again, with music and writing, we can put our stuff right on YouTube or right on iTunes, or, you know, we can put our stuff out immediately. In my case, I knew that I had a message that was important, and I wanted to have it in the stores and have a professional, you know, publisher helped me edit and also distribute.
Right. There's certainly a place for self-publishing and print on demand, and actually there's some wonderful books that have come out of that process. Mm-hmm. But I believe there's still a place for the traditional publishing realm, because for one thing, it does serve as a filter. And so when you go pick up a book in a bookstore and it has an imprint that you're familiar with, that you're more likely to open the book and look at it, I think, because you know that.
Absolutely. I will give your audience, because I know it's about writers, I will give your audience a real tip, is that publishers today, unless you're a John Grisham, or you're writing some amazing novel that they can't turn down, especially self-help, publishers want to know that you have connection with people. They don't want somebody sitting on the mountaintop sending them something. They really, it's a very important, I say the most important part of the proposal, other than page one, which is what your book's about, is how are you going to sell that book?
The fact that I speak,
I have a website that people visit, I have a lot of exposure, I was offered to do a campaign of my own besides the publicity, for instance, having someone set up shows like yours. That's very important today, you know, especially with the economy. They do not want to lose money, so they want to know that somebody is going to go out and sell the book. And I think that's where a lot of writers miss it or get disappointed. They think, well, I wrote a great book, now go sell it for me. It's not like that anymore.
No.
Well, of course, you have the advantage
of... Go out and sell your own book, and that's what gets you a contract. As much as you can have a great book, but if you say, you know, I stay home, I don't go out and I have no contact, you're probably not going to get a publishing contract.
You know, your book enhances your speaking and conferences, and vice versa. Like you said, you really need
to have
a
publisher knows that you're going to be out in front of people. They're going to make some money.
Right,
but if you're a writer, either publish it yourself or let a publisher know that you're going to, what they call the platform, you're going to be out there in front of X people a year. That's really what it's about nowadays. It is a numbers game, unfortunately or not. And so I just wanted to send that tip out to your writers that write a great proposal, and also make sure that in that proposal you show how you are going to sell the book yourself.
And be prepared to do that.
And be prepared to do it, because they're going to count on it, and it's part of your contract, if you will, you know, that they're going to come back to you and say, okay, you said this, that, and you want to keep your word for sure.
You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. Our guest today is Steve Siskold, the author of What's Your Body Telling You? And don't forget, if you're listening on Friday, about Art in the Park tonight, which is sponsored by KRUU, the Art Walk. And be sure and come by the True Blue Cruiser next to the sound stage and say hi to the KRUU DJs that will be working there tonight. Steve, let's go back a little bit to the subject matter of your book, which is really fascinating to me. As I've matured or gotten older, however you want to say it, I certainly have come to trust more what the signals that my body tells me, and I have the great fortune to have a business partner who also really trusts my gut feelings about things and wants to know what my gut is telling me about decisions that come up. And so I have that support for that. But it's still not easy. Sometimes it's very easy to recognize what my body's telling me, but sometimes it's not. So what are some of the methods that you've developed to make it easier to recognize?
Thank you. Well, I think the first thing is, you know, like anything, preventative maintenance really makes it easier to catch the signals in our body. You know, if we're exercising, if we're breathing consciously, if we're scanning and listening to the tensions in our body just to notice, I think on a daily basis as a habit, I always recommend to wake up in the morning and set your day that way, set the tone of the day. Start by breathing. Why breathing? Well, breathing is, you know, going to relax you, it's going to calm you, it's going to center you. And if you look at any healthy baby in a hospital room, or you look at martial artists or yoga teachers, they all breathe deep in the belly. So yeah. I think it's very important to breathe deep in the belly and scan your body and notice at any time whether you want to do it as a regular practice or whether you just every three or four times a day just say, I'm going to check in with my body. What's my body telling me? Take a nice deep breath or two or three, because that'll calm you and get you centered. You know, if you can, close your eyes and just scan. You'll notice, even right now, you can notice, am I gripping my hands? Am I breathing? Are my shoulders up to my ears? I think it's really important to continuously increase your body awareness through that. And the other thing is, what I always say is, don't get frozen in your thoughts. You know, Albert Einstein said this amazing thing, which was, you can't solve a problem with the same thinking that created it. Often we'll get stuck in a thought or a problem or a fear. We heard something, it bothers us, and we'll get stuck in it, and it's important to separate the fact from the fiction. Often we'll make it worse than it is. You know, somebody heard that somebody got fired at their company, and they're laying in bed all night imagining that they got fired and that they're going to lose their job. It's not true. It's what you're worried about, but it's not necessarily fact. So I would just say to watch that mind with all the spinning it does and the fact, and continue to breathe and listen and scan your body so that you can be aware. A couple reasons. One is, if somebody makes an offer to you and all of a sudden your belly's tightening and all these alarms are going off, it's really important to listen to it. Maybe you shouldn't take that offer up. Maybe that investment or that decision isn't the right one. Maybe your body's telling you something. And then also, it's just a really good idea before you go out into the world, if you're in sales or going on the radio, whatever, it's important to just be aware of what's going on in your body, so that tensions, postures, anything that could impact your behavior, you're aware of it.
Well, you know, there's a nerve that runs down, and if you breathe through your diaphragm, because I'm a singer and so I do this, even unconsciously, breathe through your diaphragm instead of raising your shoulder, instead of doing that, it calms your whole body. It's called the vagus nerve, right?
There you go.
Yeah. And it works. It absolutely works. That's because...
But, you know, the other thing is, I was on television for a former book, and they called me, and I'm a pretty confident person, but they called me they said, you'll be on in 5 minutes, and I noticed I got such anxiety and was really nervous. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, why am I nervous? I'm usually pretty confident in these situations. And what I noticed is that, you know, stored in my body, again, were some old feelings. The first time I left my neighborhood, and some bullies jumped on us and sent us home. And, you know, for a while, I think in my body I carried a place that said, boy, if you go out too far from your nest, it's not safe. So here I am, you know, now I'm very confident because I've worked through that, but in that moment, it was almost like my 8-year-old boy was sitting in the TV studio and was told he was going to go out into an unsafe place. So I just had to affirm in myself, I'm safe, I'm relaxed, I'm going to be on TV. This is not when I was 8 years old. I'm here now. Often we don't separate the past from the present, and the past experience gets in the way of what we're experiencing now.
You know, it's important if we can realize what our body's telling you when we have to go to the doctor, if we can tell them what our body's telling us, because we know how we feel. And
that's, you just nailed it there. People said to us as kids, Mommy, I'm really hot. I need to take off my sweater. You're not hot. Oh, God, that really hurts. No, it doesn't. So what you just said is really the crux, that we, more than anybody else, can't argue with me. If I say I have an itch, I have it. But often people outside of our world told us that we didn't know what we were feeling.
Yeah.
Got confusing.
And
yeah.
It seems like our medical system has continued that often doctors didn't want to actually hear.
They don't listen.
What you are feeling, they just want, you know, they were relying on tests and sort of what they considered objective.
They want to treat what they think they know.
I didn't think of that. I wish I would have.
Yeah.
I talked about, you know, the technology changes and parents and coaches and teachers that, you know, discourage us. But you covered a really good area, the doctor. I like that.
Yeah. Well, maybe that can go in your
next book.
That's
good information.
Well, Steve, before we get too close to the end of the hour, we want to have our listeners hear a section from your book. Do you have a section you'd like to share with us?
Yes, that's very, very kind of you. And, you know, it's like you mentioned, I think, in the email that I could read a couple little sections. So I'm just going to give a couple samples to give readers, give your listeners a sense of, you know, what the book means to me and so forth. And the first I really felt was the first thing I wanted to say to people, because I feel like people have often they'll blame their body for things. They won't like how it looks. They don't see it, you know, sometimes it's like a baggage. So in my introduction, I have a short thing I'd like to read called You Have an Ally. You have an ally. Your ally holds a map to your destiny, your deepest desires and dreams. Your ally is your best friend and counselor, the ultimate success coach. Your ally supplies you with key insights and information whenever you need it. Your ally monitors your health, relationships, and finances with a clear eye. Your ally shows you the deepest truth in any moment in the most direct and simple way. Your ally can clear your mind in an instant and erase fear and doubt in a heartbeat. Your ally is on call and in your corner 24 hours a day. Your ally is your brilliant body.
Very good.
Thank you.
And that's whole body consciousness, and that's, you know, that's what we should all strive for, because to get in touch with ourselves, get in touch with ourselves.
Something else to you.
Yeah.
An amazing and unpredictable adventure began when you were conceived. From that very moment, your innate intelligence has steered you through a nonstop stream of sensations, feelings, thoughts, and impressions that make up the 5-star thrill ride called life. Sometimes this kaleidoscope stream of stimuli makes sense to you and you navigate it easily. Other times a wave of feeling or sudden event comes your way and sweeps you off course. Either way, everything that happens to you is registered in your body, literally etched in your cells and your consciousness. Your body is infinitely complex and fantastically creative. It has a huge capacity to receive, process, and integrate highly energized information, even when stuck in difficult circumstances or painful experiences. Constantly scanning both within and without, your body sorts and prioritizes all that information so you can function effectively. Regardless of where your attention might wander, your body needs all it needs to know. I call your body brilliant because of its sophisticated somatic intelligence, its boundless memory, and its unique intuitive guidance system. So that's a little bit about my approach to the body. And if I could just read one more thing just to give another flavor.
Okay.
I think it's fun to share stories and also to teach through inspiration.
Right.
So one of the chapters, I have an inspirational story of where I followed my body and how I woke up and basically had some fear in my body and I decided that I was ready to take a trip and just change my consciousness, and I'll speed you up to page 208, where I'm already in India trying to find myself, and here we go.
Okay.
1 week and a seemingly endless flight later, I arrive in Bombay. I notice a booth advertising an air-conditioned bus ride to a wonderful city with temples. I purchase a ticket. A man leads me to the bus 5 blocks away. I board the bus, which has no air conditioning, and watch as 4 men struggle to turn a crank in the front of the vehicle to get it started. My mind says, I got ripped off. Where am I being taken? But my body instinct encouraged me to trust and keep going. 5 hours later, I find myself in the middle of a wild, crowded street scene. I close my eyes for one long, deep breath and ask myself, what am I doing here? As I open my eyes, I feel present and alive. I look around. I see homes made of cardboard, people huddled around fires cooking, a wedding procession parading down the street with drummers and candle bearers, bicycle and scooter drivers dodging and honking at each other. I've visited many parts of the world, but this one like anything I've ever encountered. Here, life is inside out. Everything is happening on the street rather than behind walls. As I watch the people who are so at ease in this unruly environment, I feel like a fully clothed person in a nudist camp. I start to laugh and my body relaxes a little. I remember a comic book, What Am I Doing Here?, where a man was in a turban and loincloth, and he kept asking himself this question in the middle of a bullfight or in a mob or a mountain type. Then it hits me. I'm in India on my own, and something marvelous is about to happen that could completely change my life. That's what I asked for, and that's why I'm here. And then it goes into a whole miraculous story while I was there, just following my body instincts.
I think you should continue reading a little bit, Steve, because this is a really incredible story.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Okay. Well, I'm going to read a little more about that.
Okay.
My thoughts give way, and I notice a large herd of cows ambling down the street right in the midst of the wedding procession. The cows look relaxed and content, as if they belong exactly where they are, smack in the middle of everything. No one is concerned or put off by their presence, and as I watch this oddity, I begin to relax and notice a calm feeling flowing through my body. I wonder, how would life be if I were as certain of my place in the scheme of things as these cows? In that moment, my journey takes on a new dimension and meaning. India is the ultimate test of whole-body consciousness. I tune into the cows, absorb their way of being. They are simply here, inhabiting their wide bodies. I laugh out loud at the radical new philosophy India has offered me, cow consciousness. The more I say it, the more I like it. And then I go on to the next day. The next day, India awakens me with her pungent smells and cackling chickens. I practice cow consciousness and start walking wherever my body instinctively wants me to go. I nod and smile and mutter namaste to the curious turban Sikhs and children who follow me along an alleyway. Now, I notice my body walking down the alley and the people still following me. My mind starts asking, what am I doing here? I remember my commitment. I realize my recently waking up in fear, the eternal experience of pushing my neighbor off my chest and choosing to come to India are all important steps in my life journey. Then I notice this man. I'm just skipping forward. As I continue walking, I see a man standing under a sign that says Tibetan medicine. He gestures to me and I walk toward him without question. He invites me to walk up several flights of stairs into a small office. Another man stands as I enter and says 2 words, Dalai Lama. I shrug and repeat, Dalai Lama? He says, yes, come. He turns and walks down the stairs. I check him with my body and follow him wordlessly, honoring the sense that this is exactly what I should be doing. Then I go down, and I'll take you right here. He mounts a scooter and motions for me to climb on the back. I do, feeling my excitement growing as we drive through a maze of busy streets in the tree-filled countryside. The smells change, the air cools, I feel exhilarated. We arrive in a large field where a small circle of colorfully robed Tibetan monks are gathered. One of the monks looks straight at me as I climb off the scooter and walk toward them. He greets me with laughter. He's often affectionately called the Jolly Lama. The warmth as if to say, nice to see you again. I am ecstatic. He is the Dalai Lama. I'm a steaks.
Oh, my gosh.
That's just, that's amazing.
So one day in India, and I'm sitting with the Dalai Lama, something that people, you know, spend years trying to do. So my message is follow your body instincts. You never know where they're going to take you, but it's sure worth it.
That's an incredible story. Just,
Yeah, I know. And, you know, back to what you were saying earlier, I remember in the early days, publishers or actually agents saying, oh, no, they won't want that story. Oh, no, keep that out. No,
you're kidding.
See, I think a lot of people want you to write what they want you to write. And if you're not wanting to write a textbook, which I wasn't and didn't, I have tons of information. I have tons of science and research. I have so much in there. But it's all laced in really stories that people can get into and relate, you know, like Eat, Pray, Love.
Absolutely.
You know, you can teach through inspirational tales. And that's what I wanted to do. And thank you for being, you know, so receptive, because I think it's a great story. And I had to have those stories in my book because I wanted the readers to really enjoy and understand the experience. I always like to say, when you read my books, or hopefully when you're hearing me, I'm hoping that it actually intrigues something, that you actually feel it, that it's not just a mental exercise, but I have a lot of interactive things in my book. So my intention was that the reader would say, "Ooh, I just felt that," or, "Yeah, I noticed that in my body." So that's kind of how the book's written.
You know, not many of us can go to India or have that experience, but we all have experiences with people every day that we meet, and some of them are marvelous people, and we may not have realized it until we just open ourselves to them and let them.
Absolutely.
Let them.
Can I ask you two questions? How did you get to do a radio show together?
Well,
I love to hear that.
I started doing radio show in 1973 at the radio station here, and then worked for several years, and then my husband died, and so then I had to go back to school, get my teaching certificate, did that. And then got married again, moved out of town, not very far. Monica was grown up then and lived here, and so we just, you know.
Well, then KRUU, I don't know if you're how familiar you are with it, but it is a low-powered FM radio station, community station. It has, we have, I think, over 100 volunteer show hosts here. And we do 24/7, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week programming. Almost all of it is original local programming. So we're
fantastic.
It's quite a unique
and it's on the
experience.
Web and it's archived, and so this program can be heard
so when
all
they
over
were
the world.
When they were getting the station up and running, James Moore, our station manager, every time he saw me, asked me what show I wanted to do. and I had, you know, I thought, well, what, you know, what should I do? You know, I agreed to do a show, and then when I thought about it, I decided I wanted to do it with Mom because she had the experience on radio. I didn't. And it seemed like talking to writers was something that we could enjoy doing together.
Monica's a natural. I mean, I, you know, I don't like my grandmother used to say, she comes by it naturally. But I have another shorter show once a week on a Christian radio station in Burlington, which is the other direction from Fairfield. I live in Mount Pleasant, and so it's, you know, it's been fun. It's been fun.
That sounds wonderful. It's nice to see people doing what they love, and you're helping a lot of people. It's been a great interview so far.
Now, Steve, before we wrap up, I'd like you to just share a little bit about the story of your birth, because in a way, it seems like that's what started you on this path of of body consciousness. When you became aware,
that's true. You know, my parents lost a child before me. He died when he was about a month old, and when I was about a month old, I started to get sick as well, and they didn't know what it was. But somehow they did whatever they had to, and the community got together and did some prayers and renamed me. You know, life, and just a lot of things happened. But somehow, I think I must have gotten it because I survived, my convulsions stopped, and the only thing is, nobody told me about this. For possibly my parents didn't want me to know that I had a brother that died, so I didn't even know about it. But when I was walking around, people would say, "Boy, what a miracle he is. Hey, there's a little miracle boy." And I never understood why until I learned, maybe I was 13 years old, my aunt spilled it one day and said, "Oh, your mom's dead, you know, your brother died." I said, "What brother?" But, I think that, you know, having that early experience and then being called a miracle kind of embodied in me that I had something special to share, and we all do, and that's been my work pretty much. Mm-hmm. So thanks for bringing that up. It really has influenced how I see people. Often I'll see people with much more potentials than they see themselves, so That's why I'm a coach, and I do a lot of phone coaching and helping people, you know, in person as well, intensives at my retreat home, where people can, you know, break through. I helped a rock star break through writer's block. I've helped people, you know, I helped a woman become the first woman to win a world poker championship.
Wow.
You know, whatever people's dreams are. And, of course, she did it because her son had cancer, and she just went into poker as a way just to, you know, escape. But
yeah.
Then she realized she could have a purpose and have a bigger voice about, you know, families that have children with cancer. So I love helping people with their purpose, and I actually offer a free purpose journey on my website, which is onedream.com, onedream.com. People can take a free journey there to learn more about, you know, what they're here to do.
Great.
And also how to embody it, not just to think it, but to actually feel it in your body and then go out and take action.
There's a lot of great stories in this book, very inspirational, but there's also a lot of really practical techniques, exercises. It's almost a workbook in some senses.
Yeah.
And
thank you. I want to keep it interactive, and I hope that people will actually do the exercises, learn more about themselves, and there's also a great relationship exercise for how to talk to people in business or your spouse and children, just to be able to be more, you know, in tune with what's happening for you in your body and your experience. You're going to have a much better opportunity to communicate than if you're not aware, you know, because people see it, as we said earlier. People know when you're saying something and it's not congruent with what your body's saying and sending out a mixed message. Of course, then we get a mixed result.
That's right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on Writer's Voices. It's been a pleasure having you, Steve. And
thank you both. I think you're doing a wonderful thing. Thanks for the great questions, and I look forward to talking again.
Good.
Great. Yeah. With your next, let us know when your next book comes out.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, I will.
Yeah, for sure.
If you're listening to us on Friday, if you're listening to us on either Friday or Monday morning, our guest today was Steve Siskold, What's Your Body Telling You? And this program will be available online. We usually get it posted within a week or so on the KRUUFM.com archives. And if you're listening Friday, stay tuned for Planet Earthwild with James Moore. If you're listening Monday morning, stay tuned for The Cult Show. Don't forget Art in the Park tonight. And we'll close with a quote from Mom.
This is from George Bernard Shaw, who said, "The moment we want to believe something, we suddenly see all the arguments for it and become blind to the arguments against it."
See you next week on Writer's Voices.
Writer's Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, and Shemaine Montana. Archives available at KRUUFM.com and WritersVoices.com. Writer's Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.